Nashville, Tennessee. This is Saddle Up America on Equestrian Legacy Radio. I'm your host, Gary Holt, and today we are privileged to have with us again Backcountry Horsemen of America's past national president, Mr. Jim McGarvey, and his guest, Mr. Craig Huffines, vice president of the American Quarter Horse Association. When we come back, we'll be visiting with Jim and Craig on Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America, heard around the world, online at equestrianlegacy.net. Trinity Seeley, Rides for the Brand, and from Nashville, I'm your host, Gary Holt, and as always, on the first Thursday of the month, we're joined by Backcountry Horsemen of America's good-looking past national chairman, Mr. Jim McGarvey. How are you doing, Jim?
You've got me speechless, Gary, but glad to be here.
Gosh, going into our sixth year together.
Sure is.
Seem like
we've had a lot of interesting guests. I think we've got a particularly interesting guest today, in Mr. Craig Huffines. Craig is the executive vice president of the American Quarter Horse Association, and so we're going to be talking about Craig, and we're going to be talking a lot about the American Quarter Horse Association. Welcome on, Craig.
Well, thank you, Jim. Gary, just happy to be here with you today. Appreciate the invite.
Well, we're glad to
have you. First met Craig in, I think, the fall of 2014. The Certified Horsemanship Association, who we've had on the show, had their annual meeting in Amarillo in West Texas State University, which is just south of Amarillo. And I remember with Cindy and I, we flew into Oklahoma City, and then we drove, rented a car and drove to Amarillo, and so I had Amarillo by morning on my smartphone. And so we're driving in. There's the city limit sign. It says Amarillo. And so she recorded a video with a song playing and seeing the sign and sent it to her dad, Amarillo by morning. And so it was really an interesting visit because it was hosted a lot. Some of the events, the social events and educational events, were held at the American Quarter Horse headquarters, association headquarters in Amarillo, and that's how I met Craig. And we've worked together, and we'll talk about this a little later, over the past several years with both being on the Recreation Committee and Craig on the Board of Trustees, the American Horse Association. So we're glad to have Craig on. Craig, let me ask you, let you get to talking here. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe an overview of the American Quarter Horse Association and how you got there and became Executive Vice President?
Well, that's an interesting story, Jim. Really, we need to write a book about, you know, the beginning. And there's probably been several written about the beginnings of the American Quarter Horse Association, and it goes back into the 1940s. We're a 78-year organization that really began when a group of ranchers, back in those days, there were about 14 big Texas ranches, a couple out of New Mexico in that group, that were big stockmen, big cattle operations, big vast areas of land that they managed, and they were also raising horses. So, you know, today's farmer and rancher goes down to John Deere to pick up an implement. Well, that wasn't available back then. You know, they needed to run the range on horses, and in the evenings or on weekends, sometimes they would match race those horses down main streets and place their bets on those matches. And of course, bragging rights came when you had one of those great stallions that was athletic, good-minded, and fast, but could also take care of the cowboy on the range and understood how to move and work cattle. And so they began trading those stallions around, and breeding programs began, and they got together and decided, hey, let's start an organization and track the pedigrees of these wonderful animals, and then create marketing programs that could then evolve over, you know, several decades to promote that horse, the great quarter horse. And so that started back in the 1940s. So when I was a kid in North Central Texas, grew up on a small farm, a little cow-calf operation, we had horses growing up and would work cattle. And, of course, you know, we would play day and show those horses. And so I would get the American Quarter Horse Journal as a kid and just thumb through and look at those great stallions. And I just was always infatuated with the American Quarter Horse Association. My career path went a different way and wound up getting an animal science degree and going to work in the livestock industry for a breed association out of Kansas City, the American Hereford Association, and very much a commodity ag business organization. And we worked on a turnaround of our organization and our industry over about 20 years, and suddenly I got a phone call from some folks here in Amarillo, said, hey, would you be interested in interviewing for this spot here in Amarillo? We're going through some management transition. And I thought, oh my goodness, wouldn't that be wonderful to go to work for you know, the world's largest equine association, largest breed association of any livestock species. And it was just an honor.
Yeah.
For me to get that call and move back to Texas and get involved and engaged in this amazing industry.
Well, now, you've got the title of Executive Vice President, and I mm-hmm. guess report to the Executive Committee, but are you like the Chief Operating Officer, the Chief Executive Officer?
Chief Executive Officer, yes, sir, is an interchangeable title. And that, you know, that just means that I have a big bullseye. You know, that's the guy that you know, where the buck stops, and then I answer to an executive committee of five elected execs that come off the board of directors. We have a big board of directors, about 280 strong, from all over
wow.
the world. You know, we do business in about 100 countries.
No kidding.
Yeah, there's about 35 to 38,000 international members of AQHA. So That's what's exciting is you get to meet and visit and collaborate with people all over the world.
Well, but the one thing is, now the word quarter in American quarter horse, is that about the quarter mile of the speed or?
That's the quarter mile. That's a great question. You know, these horses were designed when they were breeding them on the ranches to have very quick speed. So they needed to be athletic, both laterally and down the straightaway. And their endurance, you know, kind of fizzled out after 500-600 yards. But that first quarter of a mile is a blistering pace. It's over 40 miles an hour. You know, we have a racing department, so most Americans think of the racing industry as the thoroughbred, and Justified, you know, was wonderful for our industry as he hit the Triple Crown 2 weekends ago. But, you know, the quarter horse is a partner in that industry, running those quarter mile straightaways and in less than 21 seconds. And so it's kind of like the difference between a sprint car or a dragster and a NASCAR where you're going around, you know, 100 times, or the difference between a miler and a 100-meter dash in human athlete form. So, you know, they're designed to go fast and a bolt of lightning out the gate. And they're extremely exciting to see when they pound it down that quarter-mile stretch.
I imagine. Well, you mentioned Justify just a minute ago, and I think Bob Baffert started his career with quarter horses, didn't he?
He did, you know, Bob Baffert and, of course, Dwayne Lucas that had a horse in that race as well. You know, both of those guys started out quarter horse trainers. I mean, they still refer to those guys as those quarter horse guys. And, of course, you know, we're honored that that they were part of our industry, but then they've really been successful in the global thoroughbred racing industry, and isn't that amazing? To see two horses hit that Triple Crown in what, 3 years or 4 years?
Oh,
that's just unheard of, and it's great for the sport.
The when we first met, and again in 2014, I remember at you gave a talk that one evening to in the museum area to a big crowd. And you mentioned you were talking about the study you had just completed of your member survey, and you had a high percentage of women, and also that trail riding was a predominant reason for owning a quarter horse. Is that
yeah.
correct in that?
You've got a great memory, Jim. You know, and I know this kind of hits your wheelhouse with your backcountry involvement. You know, if you look at our demographics, we're heavily weighted toward. Women, the female is 70% of our membership, 30% male. You know, due to the fact that our industry, I think it's safe to say, guys, it's a heavily disposable income dependent industry. So you have to have a little bit of reserves there to take care of a horse these days. And so they're middle class or greater. And the vast majority are over the age of 45. So, you know, 45-year-old women are older. Many of them are baby boomers that are now empty nesters, and their horses is their relationship, and they're tied to other women. And over 50%, probably closer to 60% of our membership are predominantly recreational riders, which mean they don't participate, you know, in competition or shows. They just love the lifestyle. And the relationship with the horse and what that brings to enrich your life. And they're looking for places to go, open sky, open trails, that they can go and enjoy that nice ride and see the country. And that's the big portion of the 250,000 dues paying members. And I would say that number is probably closer to 600,000-700,000 horse owners nationally, if not more.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because your numbers relate to every breed right now, I think. Mostly
I think
70% women. Yeah, most of them are 45 plus, and most of them are enjoying the trails with their horses. So the numbers are true for every breed.
The backcountry horsemen of America is predominantly women. I mean, I don't think it's 70, but I know it's 50 plus, and we don't have it quite broke out exactly, but I think everybody agrees that it's the majority of women in the backcountry horsemen of America. So it's I think when you're on the trails, even often you'll see a group of women, that ride together, and it is a lifestyle. It's certainly a lifestyle, and gets you up every morning. It puts me in mind too. We had the youth day at the Capitol in Atlanta at the Capitol Hill building, the Capitol building, and it was youth with the horses and outdoors, and so we were the horse kids. And the governor came to our little lunch thing. We had a big turnout. We had maybe 100 kids and parents, and the governor was there. He spoke and he said that he thought owning a horse was one of the great things for a kid to have because you gave you responsibility. You had to feed the horse, you had to clean the horse, you had to clean stalls. It gave you discipline at a young age, and it carried through your whole life. And I thought it was really a great talk by Governor Nathan Deal here in Georgia about the value of a horse inside of a family and raising kids. So,
well, you guys remember the old quote Winston Churchill said.
Yeah.
There's something about the outside of a horse that is good for the inside of a man. That goes for our kids. That goes for our working military folks, the folks who come back home from the military and with their challenges with PTSD. We're starting to see science that even documents what this relationship with the horse can do with our American folks that are disabled. So, you know, it's just an incredible animal that we've been blessed to have the opportunity to develop a relationship with. And if you look at the type of people that are a part of our association, Gary, you might get a kick out of this. There's some other statistics on them. Average household has two dogs and one cat. They 97% own at least one truck or an SUV. That goes without saying because you've got to pull those trailers around. And 36% of the folks who are members of AQHA are involved in the cattle business. So they're animal lovers. And we estimate that just on the pet side, our membership will purchase in the neighborhood of $1 billion worth of pet care products to support all those dogs and cats. It's a special kind of person that puts all of their disposable income into their animals. But you all know those kind of people. They live in my house and in yours probably, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, Craig, I've got that Churchill quote on a sign down at the barn. I look at it every morning.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He was an interesting one because he rode in the last charge of the British Empire at the Battle of Omdurman. And so he was a horse guy from the beginning. And he had his philosophy by the horse.
Well, he did. He absolutely did. Of course, back in those days in World War I, that horsepower is what ultimately gave him victory. But it's just an amazing industry that we're involved in. When you talk about economic impact of our industry, and you talk about, what this passion for the horse drives in terms of economy in the recreational vacation business, in the entertainment world, in our vehicle, automotive industry, and all the supporting endemic, groups from pharmaceutical nutrition companies to tech and all types of health. It's really remarkable, what this horse means to the nation in terms of the economy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, what I think impressive when going through, let's say, the website or the magazine of the American Quarter Horse Association is your relationship with some large corporations. You've got Ford Motor Company, Ford Truck, the F-150, and discount is related to it, and Bank of America credit card, and You've got a lot of great corporate partners, and I think that's quite impressive and says a lot about your organization and its membership and its reach.
Well, they're great partners, and we consider them partners, not just sponsors, but partners, because their sponsorship goes to supporting programs, whether it's a show program, a youth educational program, or some of our recreational writing awards programs. They're engaged with us, and their people, their marketing people, understand the power of our consumers that are members, and so it's a win-win for both of us. They're supporting our events, and then in turn, the branding power that they get by directly supporting our membership is incredible. So we did a little study not too long ago, and you brought up Ford, but you know, Ford's market share within our membership is about 53%, and out in the regular country, it's down under 30%. So you know, that's a partnership, and those are some of the things that we can share with corporate partners when they come in and take a look at who we are. We've got a very loyal membership base that, you know, when you support them, they're going to support you, and vice versa. And that's the way it ought to be, you know.
Well, if you go into a trailhead and just see what trucks models are there, it's Ford. It's
the yes, absolutely, it's absolutely.
It's in our driveway too. Well, tell us. You mentioned the program, supporting the programs. What are the programs that American Quarter Horse participates in? I know it's quite varied.
Well, we obviously are. It's almost at times like the American Quarter Horse is supporting. It's the underpinning of multiple industries within the equine industry. And so, if you just want to think about all the different ways in which you can compete in an event on a horse, from we mentioned quarter horse racing to the conformation halter horse and everything in between, from the National Reining Horse Association, all of our AQHA events, from Western Pleasure to Hunter Jumper, Hunter Under Saddle, to rodeo, barrel racing and roping, the National Cutting Horse Association, National Reining Cow Horse Association, the Versatility Ranch Horse Association and Championship, which we just held last weekend. It's a variety of specialized events where people hone in on a community and they hone that particular talent with that horse, and we're supporting all of it. And any given day, there's probably countless events of different disciplines going on in little parts and big parts of the country, over in Europe and Latin America, Australasia, up in Canada. These events are creating competition, and that competition creates a value on that horse. And so, you know, one of the big things we do is we track those competition points and earnings, and that gets put back onto the pedigree of the animal, and then that will then determine in the future the value of future progeny, say out of a stallion or an elite mare, because it tells a story. And so our association is really about telling a story of what these horses can do and are doing, you know, in that competition pen or down the racetrack.
So you sort of track the batting average of these horses.
Absolutely. We're kind of the ESPN. Yeah, we're the ESPN of the quarter horse industry. And, you know, people get into statistics. You know, they like watching leaderboards, and they enjoy watching what this particular sire's offspring are capable of doing in whatever event. And so it creates this following, you know, of what's happening on the breeding side.
Oh. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, one of the most popular events now, as far as competition, is your Ranch Horse Versatility program, isn't it?
You know, it is, Gary. It's incredible what's happening with the Versatility Ranch Horse and our Ranch Horse events, and I think it's maybe because it's simple. You know, it doesn't require a full-time trainer. You can obviously have one that can help you get better, but it's a very family-oriented event. It allows novice beginners to enter into a competition that's not only enjoyable, but they can handle it. It's And then it can get as exciting as you want. If you want to work a cow, cut a cow, work a cow down the rail, rope a calf. I mean, it can get to that level, but it's very family oriented. It doesn't take expensive saddles and tack. In fact, they discourage it. You get discounted if you come in
right.
there with a bunch of silver on. I mean, it's just cowboy, you know. They
right.
require you to wear a cowboy hat, blue jeans, dress the part. And so I think it's laid back. It's kind of a throwback to another era, and it's getting some growth.
Well, I think that's it. I think it's going back to what the real working cow horse was supposed to do. And I had Al Dunning on the show not too long ago, and he was talking about some competitions that he had been at. And he said just the size of the classes was unbelievable. Compared to the other classes,
they're getting a lot of growth, and it's working in the youth age groups. Mm-hmm. A lot of youth are getting involved. You really don't necessarily have to, you know, buy a really really expensive horse to be able to compete. So there's a lot of good things, you know, about that particular event being inclusive. And I think inclusive is the word, it's the phrase of the day when related to how we service, you know, our equine industry. How inclusive can we be, you know?
Right, 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 right. Well, we want to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about what you're doing to bring more youth into the association, because I know that's important with every breed right now. And a few more of the programs that you've got with the American Quarter Horse Association. But you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America, heard around the world, streaming live, online, and on demand at equestrianlegacy.net. We'll be right back.
My youth, top horses, tough cowboys, were all that I knew then. Each one was tested and true. Chasing wild cattle through mesquite and thick choya, thorn dripping right through our hides. Brush popping cowboys, we hit that brush running and trust to our ponies and ride. Wild Texas cowboys riding for our brand, back in the days of my youth. Riding, whooping, roping, we drug them from the brush. Yeah, I once rode with the best. Long days in the saddle in that South Texas heat, our skin burned deep by the sun. On horses hot and lathered, punching holes through the brush, spurring to our cowdogs on the run. We rope them where we found them, tied off hard and fast, flip the rope, trip them to the ground. A tough cow horse to hold them, we'd bail from the saddle to wraps, and a hooey tied them down. Wild Texas cowboys riding for our brand, back in the days of my youth. Riding, whooping, roping, we drug them from the brush. Yeah, I once rode with the best. Seems like it was just the other day. Top horses, tough cowboys were all that I knew back in the days of my youth. Just wild Texas cowboys riding for our brand back in the days of my youth. Riding, whooping, roping, we drug them from the brush. Yeah, I once rode with the bears. With the best.
That's Gene and Gary Prescott. I once rode with the best, and I'm Gary Holt. And joining me on the show today are our good friend, Mr. Jim McGarvey, as with Backcountry Horsemen, as well as Craig Huffines, who is the executive vice president of the American Quarter Horse Association. But when we left, I wanted to ask, you know, it's a real problem today bringing young people into any organization and getting them involved with horses. What's the American Quarter Horse Association doing to help bring more youth into the program?
Well, there's a couple of things we're working on. You know, one is trying to get good horses in the hands of kids, and we have a program that we developed about 4 years ago called the Young Horseman Program, and young teenagers or younger actually can apply for their own colt. And so there's some breeders that have donated a young yearling colt, and last year we gave close to 100 of them away.
Wow.
To kids, and then we give them instructional opportunities to start that colt as a baby through groundwork, you know, just the basic groundwork of getting that baby used to being on the lead, and footwork and lunging and loading in and out of a trailer, and just the very basics of that early programming, that early relationship, and then they can migrate up into breaking that horse, you know, and colt starting. And so that's been a very interesting program where we've seen just unbelievable young people engage with a brand new baby yearling. You know, we want to try to expand it beyond that because there's career paths that these kids get involved and engaged with the equine industry. There's all kinds of career paths that they might take outside of training or veterinary medicine. I mean, there's just all kinds of entertainment, digital marketing venues where, you know, kids can get involved in their lifestyle with the horse, but also follow these different career paths where they might come back and support the industry. And so we're trying to create some educational opportunities for kids. Just this weekend in College Station, Texas, Gary, we're holding a youth excellence seminar. A couple of hundred youth will come down for educational background, and they'll politic a little bit and run for a national board. And right alongside that is the Youth World Cup. And so kids from Europe and Asia and Latin America, Canada are flying in to compete with each other on horseback at College Station. And so, you know, we're trying to keep these kids engaged. We took about 12 of them to Washington, D.C. 3 weeks ago to the American Horse Council Convention. And those kids got by Secretary Perdue's office at the Secretary of Agriculture and had a good visit with him. And so we're trying to keep them connected politically, some of these real good leaders in our youth group. So, you know, one of the challenges we run into is adult leadership. And what we're finding in 4-H is that we're seeing fewer and fewer adults step up and support equine programs. And I think that's an area we need to work on.
Wow.
Because they need mentors. You know, they need people that they can learn from. And so many of our initiatives is how do we align with 4-H at the grassroots level and start these clubs where kids can socialize with their equestrian project and also have some good mentorship. And so I think that's an area that really needs work.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
I know, that well, puts me in mind of, go ahead, yes.
I wanted to ask, too, speaking of programs, and you mentioned a little bit earlier in the show about the relationship that you're seeing between horses and veterinary and vets. And
yes.
Do you have a program geared toward vets and working with them, with the horses?
Well, I'll tell you, we have a American Quarter Horse Foundation as one of its pillars is to support equine-assisted therapy. And so as a part of that, obviously you can channel that through different programs that are working with veterans who've come home with PTSD, and that's a major issue. We talked about it at the American Horse Council 3 weeks ago. There's a study currently ongoing at Columbia University that's actually documenting the science that's suggesting that there is a true impact and effect improving the condition of PTSD in veterans. And, you know, that science has been elusive in the past. It's been anecdotal, but now we're starting to see some real figures and some statistics showing how it can impact. And one of the problems we have, there's 22 veterans committing suicide every day.
Right.
That's a statistic that has been talked about here recently, and it's heartbreaking. And to the degree that we can use this horse to impact their lives, number one, that horse is tending to keep them in therapy longer. You know, when they're, you know, many of them just drop out. They get frustrated, they drop out, but that relationship with the horse tends to keep them involved in therapy longer, giving them a better chance for improvement. And so, Gary, I think there's immense opportunity here. We need to raise more money. We need to do more research. And Lord knows, our young men and women of the military need the help. So, you know, that's an area we're engaged in.
Yeah, yeah. I had, do you remember Jennifer O'Neill, the actress? We had Jennifer on the show a couple of weeks ago, and she actually lives just outside of Nashville. She's been here for about 24 years. But they have an equine-assisted therapy program that's geared toward servicemen and women and first responders to help with that. And they've had people like Kix Brooks that have come in and helped raise money and put on shows to provide funds to keep this going. But it doesn't cost them anything. It doesn't cost the servicemen or women anything to attend. And it really has had an impact on them. So kudos to anything that American Quarter Horse Association is doing to help towards that end.
Well, we appreciate it. Now, you know, our big job is fundraising, and so we're always interested in working with people who want to help fundraise and help support. We give out a lot of grant proposals to folks who are running these different clinics, and boy, it's just fabulous work.
It really
when
is.
You get that
really
kind of response,
is.
You bet.
It really is. Changes lives, not only for the service men and women, but for their families as well. But,
absolutely.
Another area that I wanted to ask about, and Jim, I hate to cut in on you, but I promise I'll jump right in, Gary. I'll be quiet in just a minute. But you have a trail horse program with American Quarter?
We do, absolutely. There's about 20,000 registered riders, and they log hours and distance on their horses for awards. We give away saddle pads and belt buckles and, you know, different incentives for hitting different targets. And this year, we've actually created an application for their phone that will actually help to track those trail rides. It'll map it for them. It'll collect their distance.
Great.
And we're kind of integrating some modern technology that we use on hikes and, you know, the hiking industry and trying to deploy it, you know, with their horse and that stuff that data can automatically be uploaded into our headquarters where we can track it and create some social opportunity back and forth where they can share their information with their friends and the like of that. So, you know, anything that you can do where you can use technology to track progress, whether you're working out at the gym or doing your road work, or your cycling or your hiking or horseback, it's kind of modern times, and we're just trying to modernize that part of it.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We need to encourage people to participate in those kind of programs, and that's pretty cool stuff. How many members do you have? Did you say over 250,000 paid members?
We're right at
250,000 paid members.
251,000. About 35,000 of those are international. And
yeah,
the big populations of international, about 50% international are from Canada. About 10% Latin America, and then about 20% Europe.
Okay.
So we have a tremendous organized following in Europe, Latin America, and of course to the north border.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that is so cool. I've had some folks that have been on the show doing clinics, and they've gone to Germany, for example, to do clinics, and they said they're just amazed at the number of folks that show up for those multi-day events that are taking place over there. Just to watch. They see more cowboy hats than they do in Texas sometimes.
That's right. That's right. You know, there's a real, you know, when you get over to Europe, there's a real affinity for our Western heritage. And, you know, our everyday cowboy, you know, we'll send a few of those clinicians over there, and those people are just fascinated. You know, they want to have a piece of that. They like to have a little bit of that lifestyle, and I think that's about as close as they can get unless they come over here and we get them on a ranch, right? So it's just incredibly interesting to engage with folks from around the world. You get down into Latin America, man, now their cowboys are real cowboys. They're not cowboys, they're gauchos, but
right,
a different culture,
right.
But they have the same tendencies as our cowboys. They're very proud, wear the beret, the cummerbund, you know, they've got the knickers with the boots. So they've got their look too, you know, that's uniquely them. But they are just like our cowboys down there in Latin America.
Right, right. Jim, you had a good question about challenges. You wanna address that?
Well,
challenges
we've
and opportunities.
Well, the I know that we have the challenges of in the backcountry horsemen, it's probably similar to the trail riders, the Quarter Horse Association. It's we have an aging membership, and it's you know, we're replacing our folks that retire from riding or kind of, you know, slow down a good bit. Are we bringing new folks in? And we talk about it in the backcountry horsemen, whether it, you know, we work with kids and college age also. Take them out in the backcountry and volunteer trips and you know, and those type of things. But then there's the big gap of, let's say, 20 years or 25 years where you have a family and you get a mortgage and kids and all that and car payments. And before you can kind of get your head above water here, like you, as Craig mentioned, 45 and 50. And I assume that's sort of the same thing you have in the American Quarter Horse Association. Kind of maybe, and you've worked with kids a lot, but do you have a gap then at a point in time?
Yeah, I think we do, Jim. I think a challenge for any organization or any industry when you talk about transferring membership from childhood to adult, you have that gap, and it, you know, it starts when these kids go off to college, and they work on that education, and of course, they're not going to have time, or the money, many of them to get into whatever their hobby is, whether it's horseback riding, bicycling. I mean, there's tends to be a gap between there, and then they move on and they start young families in a career path. And so that 20-something, early 30-something age group is where we start to see a real loss. And then they come back at age 45 or 40, you know. So we're trying to figure out how do you engage those people in their 20s and 30s when they don't have a lot of disposable income. They probably can't afford to board a horse. Unless they're partnering with a buddy somewhere and they're splitting the cost. But without the horse, how do you keep them engaged in the lifestyle? And so those are some things that we're thinking about, you know, creating councils and vacation opportunities and educational meetings and forums to try to create a community of those young adults, to just keep your hooks in them, right? Just keep them, engaged and interested, because there's a likelihood that they're going to get involved at some point in time when they have the money or when they have some time. And so that, I think that's a challenge, whether you're in sports or golf or hunting and fishing. I mean, it's just that time of life when kids are just trying to get launched. And we all miss them, you know. I've got two of them right now. I've got two sons, one in college and one's about to graduate from med school. And I asked him, I said, hey, you ready for a new set of golf clubs? He said, Dad, I don't have time to play golf. You know, forget about that, you know.
Yeah.
You know. But it's, you know, whatever ideas we have collectively as an industry, we need to pool, because if you lose them, then you may not get them back. You know, you just
that's true.
You got to focus on.
That is true. Well, it's a wonderful sport to be involved in, and some people like myself have been involved before I was born. My dad had horses. We had horses growing up. And I can't think of a time when I haven't owned a horse. So not everybody is fortunate like that to be able to have that kind of an opportunity.
Well, for me, it was an odd thing. I didn't grow up with horses. I realized that I've had cattle as my next door neighbor for 60 of my 70 years, have had a cow as my next door neighbor, but not horses. My first horse ride was down the Grand Canyon on mules on the North Rim, and after that I felt, well, I think I can ride a horse, but it was a good start, and we raised our daughters, you know, with horses and 4-H pony clubs and all that, and so it became quite a family thing for us with our daughters, it's probably, like you say, golf, sports, anything. It's keeping them connected through the years, and we've all worked on that in our own realms. I did want to talk about one thing that I was really impressed with in Amarillo at Martin Quarter Horse is your museum, and that timeline. I thought it's a sort of horizontal walk through a museum with American Quarter horses or events going through time, but then it's tied into going, you know, Elvis Presley in 1957 and different things through time that matches these things were going on at the American Quarter Horse. Could you talk about that a couple minutes? I found that very fascinating.
Well, our museum is dedicated to a couple of things. One, it's honoring both amazing horses that did extraordinary things in our breed, but also some amazing people that have done some extraordinary things for the benefit of the industry. And so those are the folks that we induct every year and honor at the museum. There's also a learning center that kids can come in and they can learn more about the horse and a little bit about the history of the quarter horse and what have you. But our art director, along with some of our marketing people, had the idea that when you timeline this, it's kind of hard for kids, you know, our teenagers, to grasp what the era was when this particular horse was running or when this particular breeder or leader of our industry was really engaged in the industry. And so in the background, behind those different horses and people, there's these displays of the times. So you just mentioned Elvis, you know, when he was getting started in the 50s. Well, you know, here's this unbelievable horse that was a rodeo champion. It was a quarter mile champion that was running during that time when Elvis broke loose, you know, out of Memphis, and so that history timeline goes through. You might have something on Eisenhower, you know, during World War II, or maybe when he was elected president. And so those are things that maybe kids can relate to a little bit historically in that time frame, and it's kind of interesting to know, you know, that particular animal was popular, back here when Gerald Ford was president, or this particular pop artist was big, you know. So Mickey Mouse started at Disney World or Disneyland, right? So it's kind of fun, and the kids like it.
It's really well done, and like you say, it is captivating, and because sometimes bloodlines of horses, you can say, you know, unless you're really into it. But the way you laid it out, it's really well done, and it's a magnet, I think, just to walk right over and see that whole display.
Well, the interesting thing is if you're really a student of horses, I mean, it's kind of, these horses are celebrities, and when you read about what they were able to do and what their contribution to the population of quarter horses are, and it's pretty amazing. And you know, we get a lot of calls from folks that buy a horse and they get a pedigree, and they really don't understand who's on that pedigree, who's the grandsire and the maternal grandsire, and when you can tell them, say, hey, you've got three Hall of Fame horses in your pedigree. Well, I don't care what that horse looks like, or how smart he is, or how athletic. It doesn't matter at that point, right? That's my horse, and he comes from Hall of Fame blood, you know, and that's kind of a neat thing.
That is right. Well, it's amazing how the American Quarter Horse, and I think it's been called America's Horse, has had such an impact on so many people. Now, my breed is another breed of horse, but even I'm familiar with Wimpy and Poco Bueno and some of the other horses that have been famous in the quarter horse lineage. And it's just amazing the impact that horses and their bloodlines and the good ones have really had on our lives.
You bet.
So we're about to run out of time, but I want to give you an opportunity, Craig, if there's anything that you think that you need to tell us about the American Quarter Horse Association and kind of leave folks with.
Well, I think the first thing is, if you're not a member of the AQHA, we'd like to invite you to be a member. It's $50 a year. And with that membership, you get a free magazine. It's not free. It comes with your membership. America's Horse comes out 12 times a year. And it's great, interesting stories of a cross-section of what's going on in the quarter horse world, from recreational riding to rodeo to some of these great horses and great events. And so that kind of keeps you dialed in and tuned in to the quarter horse industry. And then there's these beautiful benefits that John Deere and Ford and many others can provide to you as a member. But most importantly, we'd like for you to be a part of our community. And when you're involved in our community, that means that there's a lot of things you can get involved in, whether it's supporting the foundation, helping to put on events, coming to our convention, going to national shows or trail rides. You know, we talked about it, Gary, today, raising money for our veterans, for equine-assisted therapies, or for kids who have disability, to raise money for research that will advance the health and the welfare of our horse. There's just so many different directions you can go by being a member of the AQHA, and we just like to invite you to be a part of it. And you can go to AQHA.com or .org, AQHA.org, and look us up and find out more about us. And we just love for you to be a part of the community.
Well, it's a great website, and it's full of great information. And I would encourage folks that if they aren't member to join, and even if you have another breed of horse, you might want to join the AQHA just so you can keep up with everything.
Well, we're not discriminative. We love all horses, and we love all people, you know, that are involved in the equestrian industry, and we need to work together, right, to preserve our way of life and to preserve those lands, those public lands, Jim, that you've been fighting for so long, where we can get on those backcountry trails and live that good life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Jim McGarvey, anything that you'd like to that we need to know about backcountry horsemen, anything exciting going on?
Well, it appears that our next national board meeting, which will be in next April 19, will be in Asheville, North Carolina. And so, yes, and that's, I don't have the exact location yet in my notes yet, But so be on the East Coast for the folks here, and in a great town of Asheville. So I do want to point that out for folks to come by and visit, and also to go to bcha.org and find out more information there.
All right, so check it out. Biltmore, I haven't been to the Biltmore in years. That'd be a good opportunity to go, wouldn't it?
Sure would. The fastest I've ever been on a horse was at the Biltmore along the Broad River, you know, down below it.
Yeah.
My quarter horse, Rusty, and he was wide open, and I was like hanging on. It was, I think it was doing that quarter mile, Craig.
There you go.
Oh, gosh. Flat stretch along the bank, you know. Yes, Biltmore.
Yeah. Yeah. Do a little trail riding up at the Biltmore, too. So that's pretty cool.
That's fun up there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you guys have been absolutely great guests. Jim, always good to have you with us. And Craig, it's
Thank
been
you.
A real pleasure to meet you and to have you on the show today and share great information about America's horse, the American Quarter Horse. And we're going to close the show today. We want to remind you that you can join us again next Thursday for the Campfire Cafe, beginning at noon Central Standard Time and followed by Saddle Up America immediately after. And we want to remind you, as always, if you climb in the saddle, to get ready for the ride. We're going to close the show out today with a great song by Bryn Hill. It's called Rawhide Braider. Thanks for listening.
Take time to lay every
string tight and straight. Make something that's worthy of pride. We'll live long after you die. Over to undo to lay pull again. I will teach you Riata, my friend. One day we are all dust in the wind. Over to wander to